All right, welcome to Stax Gaming Squad Game of the Month, number 2, technically, but number 1, actually, because this is the first game. Last podcast was about the Defenders. Let's go around and introduce ourselves. People, you got myself, Flyamese Cat, web developer by day, League of Legends feeder by night, casual gamer extraordinaire.
I'm Manders. I feed harder than Jared in League of Legends. I do Salesforce work and my day job, and I like pie.
Likes pie.
Yeah.
Hey, my name is John. I work in the hospital. I play video games when I get off work, and I like watching Jared feed.
So the game that we chose this month was Seiken Densetsu 3, which is the direct sequel to what we know as Secret of Mana, released on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. This particular title was released in 1995 in Japan, 2 years after Seiken Densetsu 2 was released. And the original was actually released over here as Final Fantasy Adventure, Legend of the Holy Sword, something or another. It was a Game Boy-only game. And yeah, the Mana series itself follows sort of a template. You do have recurring characters such as Rebites and the Mana Tree, the Mana Sword, the Mana Goddess. And you also have the 8 Mana Spirits who follow the Mana Goddess. And whenever you start off, when you choose your hero, you find out that the Mana Tree is dying in every single game.
Poor Mana Tree.
Yeah, every time. And the Mana Goddess has to choose someone because she, although a goddess, her power is tied to the Mana Tree and she cannot save the world by herself. So we jump into this game. We end up with 6 total characters. You get to choose 3 only, and we get to play through it. So what do you guys think about the gameplay of this title?
I guess I'll start. So I thought it was fine. I think so. Fighting monsters was okay, except I had Angela the magician, and I had to cast spells all of the damn time to like kill shit because she was really strong. And going into that menu and selecting the spell again and again, and then not just that, but sometimes the game would like Angela would be doing something else on her own, and then I'd have to wait for her to complete that action before I could cast the spell. So then I'd have to exit out of the menu, wait a split second, reopen the menu, then try to cast the spell again. You know, so that was just a 1995 thing. Like in today's world, that's like in trying to play it in, you know, what, 2017 we were playing it. Trying to play it in 2017 was just unacceptable. In terms of like UI and gameplay, but like it was fun when I didn't have to spam Angela.
Yeah, I took kind of the opposite approach. I picked a bunch of melee characters for my starting team, so it was just a straight button mash going through the first 3-4 hours of the game, which was easy, which is great if you want to do that. But in a menu based RPG, casting magic, yeah, it needs to be a lot more intuitive. And I don't think it really got that much more intuitive in a real time game until like much later. I mean, I think it was like Kingdom Hearts that really was just like, hey, let's just tie them to like a, at max you get 2 buttons to yeah, go and cast your spell. But all the way up until then, like even in other action RPGs around that time, like Star Ocean, or even Star Ocean a couple years later, Second Story on the PlayStation Network, it was the same thing. You could either run a bunch of melee characters and button mash, make everything real simple. But if you wanted magic casters on your team, you'd have to go through the menu slog. And if you put them on autopilot, they do the same thing where they just run themselves out of mana.
You know? Well, yeah, that honestly, I'm okay with there being like an autopilot that my mages don't understand anything and just do stupid stuff. Like, that's fine. I'll be okay with it. But having it like, there are tons of times where it's like, I'm in the middle of a fight, my melee attacks do 3 damage, I need to cast spells, and it was just annoying.
Yeah, I will say for the time that it came out, real time, RPG, they were pretty much the leading name, pioneering that gameplay.
Oh so, yeah.
For the time being, if we were to step back into 95 and look at it.
Oh yeah, I would have been like, this is the best thing ever.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. I feel like I do. I haven't played all of them, and in that whole little time area, I will say like the melee system evolved from Secret of Mana to Seiken Densetsu 3. But yeah, the spellcasting it definitely didn't evolve at all. And I guess it did evolve a little bit because in the Secret of Mana, you had to level up your spells by spamming them, which was incredibly tedious and incredibly grindy for no reason at all. But in this one, you had access to the full power spell. But yeah, I mean, like you guys were saying, in the current state of the day, that sort of stuff is like, you know, it's sort of inexcusable. Like a game like that just doesn't really function in modern day. But for a Super Nintendo game, it definitely was very forward, because even if you look at something like A Link to the Past, they didn't have anything like that. Like, you had to switch your weapon, and you'd pause to the pause menu, you could select the fire staff and throw some fire. But there was nothing like that to where you could have a character to actually cast spells. And I think another thing, a small little caveat is, you know, they really wanted to be focused on the multiplayer aspect. And so even though you would have to pause, your friends were supposed to actually be there next to you, pausing it for you, which I don't know if that would have been a good thing or a bad thing if I had somebody constantly casting spells next to me. I might have,
That is interesting.
I'd have been a little tilted.
I do have to say, for 95, well done.
Yeah. Like, another, you know, this is kind of related, but when I was playing Pokemon Gold and Silver, I thought the greatest thing this game did was implement day and night Pokemon. I thought that was great, and I didn't realize until I went into Seiken Densetsu 3 that came out so much later. Gold and Silver came out in 1999. This game came out. They did the same thing. When the first day turned into night, it was kind of like a werewolf kind of deal. When he would fight during the day, he would just melee and it'd be all normal. But at night, he would transform it to just do massive damage. And I thought that was really interesting. They also implemented days of the week, you know, with the other RPGs going on around the time. None of the other series were really doing that at the time.
Yeah, which I thought that was a very nice touch, because there are eight spirits, and so you had the spirit of dark and light would represent daylight and night time, and then you had the mana holy day, which would represent the Sunday, of course, and the spells were stronger on the day that the spirit was active, and so on Gnome's Day, gnome spells would be stronger, etc., etc. And so I kind of went the Mander's route, but I used Reese as my main character. She was the Valkyrie with the spear, which I ended up going Star Lancer. No, I think it was I think it's Star Lancer, where you can cast stat up spells on your entire party. Which the melee characters are easy enough, but you know, as far as the difficulty curve is concerned, you start off, it's, you know, you kind of breeze through a little bit. Then once you get to the ice area, it starts to get a lot harder, and you'll probably end up wiping a few times if you're not leveled up properly, and you'll actually have to grind. Then you get your class change, and the difficulty plateaus for a little bit longer. Then you start to reach the end game, and it starts to get impossible. Like, some of the god beasts, you can't necessarily beat them unless you have your second class change. But, I mean, I do like Reese, because you can just cast stat up spells, like how Manders, and myself too with Angela, I had Angela in my party, trying to cast magic, became a bit cumbersome. But then when I had Reese, all I had to do was cast attack up and defense up, and I could just mash buttons and just one-man army any sort of boss. Which is, I mean, it was cool. I did like the gameplay. I appreciate it. It was a nice little throwback. And, I mean, I guess that's sort of why it would have been good if it came over to the West, because they would have had another sort of point of view of the action RPGs. And, I mean, they just didn't get that. And there's no real reason for it, I think. But anyway, let's move on, guys. Let's the storyline. How far did you guys get in our game of the month this month?
So, I got to the ice plane.
What about you, John? Oh.
I did not even get that far. I thought I got my third character, and I stopped. I lost track.
Dang.
Yeah, I hit the first. I hit the first difficulty spike, and it was just becoming so cumbersome to just like continue to keep on doing this again and again. And I was just like, I'm tired. I was like, I stopped in the middle of at a silver save point. In between like the ice city and like the boss fight, and I was just like, I'm fucking done.
Yeah, yikes. Mm-hmm. That's definitely yikes. Yeah,
I got my character, and he's like, oh, you know, like this person lost a family member, so they're gonna look for the mana goddess to for help. And then I got the second character, and he's like, oh, I lost a family member, I'm gonna go to the goddess mana goddess for help. And then the third one also lost a family member and went to the goddess of mana for help. I'm like, huh, you know, like there's six characters, but the start of each of their stories was a little flat for me. I didn't get to see how it ended, but a concept like that for an RPG is very interesting in terms of replay value.
Yeah, I did. One thing, I thought the story was really strong, having played through the entire game a few times. It does ramp up a lot. You start off, everybody does lose a family member. It starts off with these warring nations, and I guess there's a trope that's used sometimes. You don't see it that often, but it's, you know, the whole multiple enemy tropes, and so there are three main evil kingdoms that all want the Mana Sword to take over the world, and then you're the hero chosen by the fairy, just through the pure instinct of being in the wrong place at the wrong time, because, you know, you could have just chilled out somewhere, and someone else could have saved the world, but because you decide to stay at that inn that night and follow the light, the fairy chose you, and so you end up becoming the hero. Which I will say, I think it was Final Fantasy VI where Kefka ended up actually destroying the world. I think this one, you can definitely see some sort of inspiration. Or when did Final Fantasy VI come out?
It came out in 1994.
94,
just
okay.
Just the year before.
Man, just the year before. Who would have guessed that both of those companies made those two games?
Yeah, right.
It's the same company. Yeah.
Yeah.
They shared people back then. You know that, man.
Oh yeah. Well, we're gonna get into that.
They had to throw people here and there and whatever.
Yeah. They said, oh, you know, this worked for Final Fantasy VI. This can work for Seiken Densetsu 3. And I think it did work because, you know, you're three people fighting against three separate entire armies that are hell-bent on destroying the world. They're going to destroy the world. They're going to destroy all the crystals and unseal them. They're going to release all the god beasts, and they're going to revive the Dragon Emperor in the end, and then that's when you actually get to save the world. You don't get to stop them from actually wreaking chaos and havoc. There's too many. Three people aren't going to stop, you know, 5,000 people. That's just, it's unrealistic, and we do see that, which I do appreciate that. You try as hard as you can. You collect all the mana spirits. All the mana spirits are on your side. But, you know, it's just not enough until the very end, which, you know, if you guys play through our game of the month for this month, you'll see. It is very fun. It's a very whirlwind ride. You get to see a lot of different viewpoints. It kind of took sort of a Pulp Fiction style theme where you see the different stories and you get to see everybody's story and you see it from different points of view if you play through multiple times, which, yeah, I appreciate it. The story was definitely good. It does start off a little slow, which, I mean, I can't necessarily say that totally their fault. You know, if you look at something like Chrono Trigger where, you know, you're like, oh, I'm going to go to the fair. Oh, this chick that I just met just fucking disappeared. You know, that's an extremely quick ramp up with your friend with this technology that doesn't fit into the time period. But, you know, this a slow ramp up, you know, it might throw you off in the beginning because it may seem a little dry. But then the gradual ramp up and you sort of find these sort of checkpoints of, you know, you got to get the mana spirits. Okay, I got them, but I couldn't stop the bad guys. So now I have to stop the bad guys this way. Okay, I stopped that part, but I still need to stop this final thing that the bad guys have. So I appreciate the story. But, you know, it's Squaresoft, so of course they're hitting hard with the stories, as they always have and always will continue to do.
I would say, is it worth a play? I would say yes, it's definitely worth a play. It was just up to my personal schedule that I didn't finish the game.
Right, right. But
from a purely historical standpoint, yes, the West missed out on a great thing when Square decided not to release this in the States. They missed out, I think, on a big milestone in at least the early 90s gaming period. this was around the time where a lot of like different things came out at the same time. And I made a little list because I thought it was so interesting. So Final Fantasy Adventure came out in 91, which led to the game we're talking about, Seiken Densetsu 3. Secret of Mana came out 2 years later in 1993, same year that Link to the Past and NBA Jam came out. 1 year later, Final Fantasy VI came out the same year. Breath of Fire 2 came out that year too. And then in 95, Seiken Densetsu 3 comes out the same year as Chrono Trigger. Oh. It's also the same year as the first Front Mission. No. Also the same year as the Japanese release of Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together.
Oh, yeah.
Mafia 2 came out the same year. 1 year later, the first Pokemon Green and Red comes out in Japan. 1996, also Super Mario RPG. And then everything just explodes. Next year, Final Fantasy VII comes out, Grandia comes out, Final Fantasy Tactics,
Grandia Frontier. Was 97?
Yeah, Grandia was 97.
Oh, shit.
Wild Arms, Breath of Three, Symphony of the Night, Metal Gear Solid comes out the next year, and you know, it all just goes crazy. Seiken Densetsu 3 and Chrono Trigger come out in the same year. Final Fantasy VI came out the year before. Front Mission came out that year as well. All those together, Square Enix's strategy was very interesting, right? It was all very kind of like incestual. They all released 4 games of amazing quality all at the same time, and they all shared staff with each other. It was really weird, especially in terms of the story ramp-up. The ramp-up in Seiken Densetsu 3 is slow, but Chrono Trigger's ramps up real fast. They almost like have an interesting foil with each other. Chrono Trigger jacks up the story real fast, but the gameplay is pretty traditional. Yeah. As opposed to Seiken Densetsu 3, the story is pretty, has a lot of trope, pretty rote, but the gameplay was all new, so like bringing everything up to a whole new level.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in terms of graphics. The graphics in SD3 are just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for a Super Nintendo game, I did love the graphics. The music was really good, too.
Yeah. That was towards the end of the Super Nintendo's life, right? Like, we started talking
it
about
was.
Some... Yeah,
as a project.
So, like...
When I watched the opening cutscene, I saw this is like... This is like a PlayStation 1 game, at least. Mm-hmm. Mid-cycle, even. Like, this is beautiful.
Yeah, there's so much you could do with the sprites back then.
Yeah, which, you know, okay, I lost myself. I'm back, though. I'm back. I will say, I didn't necessarily like the fact that, granted, Square, we were RPG fans. We were feasting back then. Super Nintendo,
oh,
the transition
to
PlayStation.
Yeah.
We were absolutely feasting, but... You look at Square Enix right now, they only have, like, one premier franchise, which, of course, is going to be Final Fantasy. And mm-hmm. I feel like they shot themselves in the foot whenever they didn't release Seiken Densetsu 3 stateside. I did play Legend of Mana. I actually bought it. Well, I didn't buy it. I was, like, 8. My parents... No, I wasn't 8. I was, like, 12. My parents bought it for me, basically on release. And all the complaints that we had about gameplay were wiped away. And so much more gameplay was just added to it. You got pets, you got to create little golems, the magic was a lot more intuitive, the battles were extremely fun and very reminiscent to how they should be while still being better. But at that point, it was talking to our good friend Chris about Attack on Titan. You know, Attack on Titan Season 1 released in 2012, and Season 2 didn't release until 2017. When you do things like that, you know, your original product, the quality of it, at that point it doesn't matter once the hype starts to die down. And then you can kind of see Secret of Mana has so much critical and commercial acclaim. Seiken Densetsu 3, even though it wasn't stateside, it still had so much critical and commercial success in Japan. And then, but stateside, we get Legend of Mana, which at that point a lot of people may have forgotten about Secret of Mana. Some people, you had newer gamers coming in who would have never played it in the first place. And... the only thing that they had going for them was their name, Squaresoft, at the time. You know, Square Enix now. But at the time, they were Squaresoft, and that was all they had going for them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, it was enough to move copies, but I don't necessarily think it was enough to continue to build the legacy.
So I got Legend of Mana when it first came out back in 99. I actually didn't know anything about that series at all. I thought it was just some standalone game. And I never had a Super Nintendo, so this probably wouldn't have affected me. But like, that's a 5 year. So when did Secret of Mana come out?
93 in the States.
93.
Yeah, so 93. That's a 6 year gap in a time when the internet doesn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. Or it doesn't exist like it does now. So like,
That
it could have been Legend of Mana could have been a really huge game if people actually like remembered what the hell the Mana series was. But yeah, so I guess I feel like Square's software strategy over the years has kind of done silly things like that. Like they'll drop off like Brave Fencer Musashi got a sequel like 10 years later and it was garbage and nobody cared about it because the original game came out 10 years before the sequel came out and nobody really cared that nobody was like pushing for it to be good, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
you know, it's interesting that you say that nobody would remember Legend of Mana 6 years after 1993. But if you look at any retrospective of RPGs, if you're an RPG fan, you look at any article about retrospective, you're gonna see the Secret of Mana Super Nintendo cover art. It's a beautiful like piece of art with this like giant tree, it's just massive tree with the characters next to the mana sword, and these red birds just highlighting right under the name Secret of Mana. It's very iconic. But you're right. I don't know what their strategy was releasing this series piecemeal over to the States. Yeah. I haven't researched deeply into it, but they kind of did the same thing with the Final Fantasies. You know, let's release every other Final Fantasy for a couple of years in the States, and we don't really know why.
They also did that with the Saga series.
Yeah, they did.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of another series that they've ruined through bad timing. There's got to be one more that I'm forgetting. Whatever. It's not important.
The only thing I could think of is they're over there in marketing thinking, how are we going to market this game? Because we're in Japan and we know what works in Japan, but we don't know what works across the ocean, which is really a non-issue with games. If you release a game and it's good, it's just going to be good. The only thing you got to worry about is translation.
I would actually counter that. Maybe they didn't have that great of a marketing team.
Maybe there, you know, Atlus did some weird things too with their Persona series. They're changing characters' names. They're changing skin colors of characters. They're changing story elements. They're doing all this kind of crazy stuff, trying to figure out what would work best for the bottom line across the ocean. But I mean, Squaresoft was way bigger than Atlas.
Yeah.
At the time, you know.
Yeah. Lots of opportunities.
Yeah, they did lose a lot of momentum with a lot of franchises in between this time and that time. And these days, everybody's going mobile.
Maybe they weren't as like, maybe we're overstating like how much power and money Squaresoft back then actually had. Like, because I feel like if Square Enix today is trying to decide what comes out everywhere, they're like gonna go and say yeah, just send it over to America. Who cares, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
But back then, maybe they're like, we can't not have commercial successes. I don't know. Who knows what their strategy was? What were their all hand meetings like? That's what I want to know. Right.
That would be a great. I mean, that'd be a great investigation. Go into. That'd be a great podcast series. I would listen. I would listen to the hell out of that series.
Yeah,
gotta learn Japanese for it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't think it was a commercial success because most of their stuff had like wild commercial success. I think they were like really chasing after the critical acclaim, like they want it, which they are still like the hit makers, the RPG hit makers, and Yeah, they were chasing this critical success, and they had it, and they made these slip-ups, and these slip-ups just kind of killed the momentum of some of their franchises. Like, they had that cut out. Oh, no, it didn't. Okay. Yeah, it killed the momentum. Like, we didn't get a sequel in the Chrono series, too. You know, Chrono Trigger is unilaterally one of the best games ever released. Chrono Cross is an extremely worthy sequel, and then they didn't actually keep it up at all. And when
you're saying they're so busy looking for the triple hitter that they're just like losing sight of good strategy.
Yeah, I think they were just trying too hard in a sense, because they got the games out and the games were always amazing, and they would never just segue them into stuff. I'm not sure what the work environment or anything like that was, but I mean, they were the hit makers. They made hits. You struggle to find a game from that time frame within, you know, like 1990 through about 2005 with Squaresoft that was bad. You know, they didn't release bad games, and no one thought their games were bad. There may be some very rare exceptions, but yeah, they were just sort of chasing after this dream, and they ignored everything, all the gems that they had in front of them. You know, they had so many diamonds, but they're looking for something more valuable than a diamond when anybody else in their right mind would be happy having this sack full of diamonds.
Yeah.
I'll never forgive them for letting Xenogears die.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was another one. That was a sad case of the budget.
Xenogears never got finished. Xenogears was episode 5 of a 6-part, like, huge design. It could have been the video game equivalent of Star Wars. And Square Enix was like, we're going to release it with a very bad translation. And fuck you. So they just do this a lot. Square. So
yeah, it was a weird time. You know, they are making a lot of money, but they were also spending just a lot of money. Yeah. So when you're looking for the triple hitter, but you're running every player into the ground. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I have like 30 Squaresoft RPGs on my PlayStation.
Yeah.
Like I would just be like every Christmas is like, all right, and then Squaresoft made like 7 games this year, Dad. You gotta get these for me.
Yeah. That was about the gist of it. Was they just produce so much, and they produce so much quality. It's, you know, who would have imagined that Squaresoft would eventually merge with Enix and sort of a collaboration for them to survive instead of Squaresoft just thriving as hard as they possibly did.
Yeah. Right. Well, then they stopped making good games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was Enix going down, right? It was Enix was like, we got to get bought out or we're going to go under.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It still didn't save Star Ocean. RIP.
Yeah, ripping pepperonis.
So we always talk about, oh, that was a golden age of RPGs, you know, like the early to mid-90s into the late 90s. And it's kind of true. Like in the 2000s, there was a big drought. You know, you're not really getting you're getting the big Final Fantasy release every two, three years. Yeah.
That was like the biggest new thing, though.
Yeah, and not a lot of market disruption, but fast forward to this past year, I mean, we got kind of a renaissance, you know, Persona 5, Nier, New Dragon Quest came out.
Final Fantasy 15 was a really good, and it's come out for PC, so everybody's happy.
I'm looking forward to it with my old non-console having ass.
Yeah. I mean, so this past year was good for RPGs, but you have to look at the market. None of these games are released by Square Enix. You know, the market's much healthier. I don't know what caused this renaissance. You know, because for a hot minute, it was just all first person shooters just dominating the market.
Oh yeah, that was quite the annoying time. Hey, did you guys know I actually prestiged 10 times in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2?
Jesus, never, I only prestiged twice.
Never repeat that fact to anyone, as long as I may live.
You just said it on the internet, buddy.
I know, it'll follow me forever.
You're going to say it thousands of times.
Did you like it? Do you like doing that, Jared, huh?
It was pretty fun. There were some balance issues, but it was pretty fun, though.
Oh man, are we gonna start playing CS:GO now?
No, we're not. Never. Ever.
What?
What are you talking about, Jared?
Oh.
I know some people from work who are actually pretty decent. We could be like a gold level CS:GO team, man.
Wait, is it me that's out of touch? No, it's everyone else that's out of touch.
Yeah, just play League. It's fine.
Yeah, League. Hey, that character, League, that game where, hey, you know that character you were good at? Yeah, well, he's different now.
And they're not even good anymore. Yeah. They're fine. Okay, all right, guys. I think, I think we can go ahead and wrap this one up. That was very riveting conversation. I enjoyed it a lot. Taking the Setsu 3, if you guys haven't had a chance to play it yet, it has a stacks-wide seal of approval. Check it out if you can get your hands on the fan translation, which I can't tell you how, for obvious reasons.
If you have a Nintendo account, you can also get the release, the remake.
Yeah, and for this next month, we are going to play Bastion, which is it's a PC game. I think it does have a PlayStation Store release as well, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, they ported it.
Okay, yeah, it's been ported. Oh, yeah, it's ported from 360, I think, wasn't it?
Something. Like, it's on everything.
Yeah, it's on everything. So if you guys want to check out Bastion and join us for our next podcast, that's going to be amazing. We're going to play through Bastion and see what it does for us. You can hear my dog back in the background, barking in the background. He's getting a little impatient. So that's it right there. Stacks Gaming Squad signing out. We'll see you guys next month.
Sign out. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Here we go. Number two, I think. Hopefully, we just remember this shit. Manders, give a little talk to me.
I really like Cameron the Basset Hound. Go follow him at Cameron the Basset on Instagram or whatever. And remember to always eat a healthy, balanced diet.
I also second following a healthy balanced diet on Instagram and eating Cameron the Basset Hound.